My name is Victoria Bond. I'm a composer and a conductor, and I've written a number of operas, one of them being Mrs. President, about the first woman to run for president, Victoria Woodhull. Victoria Woodhull was one of the prime entrepreneurial women in history, especially for the time in which she lived. She had a stock brokerage firm on Wall Street. She also had her own newspaper, and she ran for president in 1872 when women didn't even have the vote. So an extraordinary person who really came from the most poverty-stricken, depressed background you can imagine, but had a vision of what women should have, which was complete equality. She was at first embraced by the suffragists because, of course, having the right to vote was part of that, but she went far beyond what their vision was to complete equality for men and women. And she was also a bit of a wild woman. She was really a revolutionary in every sense of the word, and that was a little bit too rich for their blood, so they abandoned her at a certain point. One of the platforms that she ran on was free love, which, as you can imagine, was a pretty inflammatory idea. But when you consider that free love meant for her the freedom to leave a relationship when love was no longer part of it, was what she meant. Because in those days, women were obligated to their husbands, and if they did ask for a divorce, which was possible, they lost all rights to their children, to their property, and they became a pariah in society. So basically, she said that some marriages were legalized prostitution. Again, words that were very inflammatory. But she did have this vision that women should be on a completely equal basis financially and in every other societal way to men. And there's one aria in my opera where she states her platform, and she says, "We already should have the right to vote because we're citizens. I pay taxes, and the law says that I should already have the right to vote." Victoria Woodhull was also a spiritualist, and she heard the voice of Demosthenes tell her to go to New York. She was born in Homer, Ohio, and it told her to go to New York to meet Cornelius Vanderbilt. And the amazing thing is that these things actually happened. You know, people have visions all the time and don't necessarily act on them. But she acted on these and really was completely convinced that she had a destiny to fulfill. So she was very bold in what she did.
Strike as hard as you please.
The subject of Victoria Woodhull was first proposed to me by my very own mother, who was traveling and stayed in a hotel that said Victoria Woodhull, first woman to run for president, slept here. And she was very intrigued with that idea and said, you know, this might make a good subject for an opera. At the time, I was working on another opera, but the idea stuck. And the more I explored the history, the more I was convinced that this was somebody I really wanted to spend some time with. Because, you know, when you're writing an opera, you become so involved in the personality and in the person over a long period of time. And it better be somebody that you want to spend time with, because otherwise you're stuck with them. And I just found the more I studied her, the more fascinated I was. She reminded me, in terms of operatic heroines, of Carmen, because she was a free woman and she was not going to be beholden to any man or to anyone for that matter. And And so many operatic heroines end up being martyrs and victims. And, you know, even though Carmen gets killed at the end of Carmen, and even though Victoria Woodhull at the end of My Opera is in jail, they are not defeated, particularly Woodhull, who in the darkest moment after she is jailed, because she spent election night in jail on a charge of sending obscenity through the mail. And what was the obscenity? It was basically revealing Henry Ward Beecher, a very famous preacher, for the womanizer that he was, having affairs with his female parishioners. And so that newspaper article got sent through the mail, and they arrested her on sending obscenity through the mail, and she was jailed on election night. So at any rate, here she is on election night in jail. All of her friends have abandoned her. Her husband has left her. Her financial empire is in complete ruins. These are circumstances that would have sunk a lesser person. But out of this dark, dark moment, she has a vision again. And this time she sees that the ideas that she has are going to be picked up by people in the future. They're going to be carried further. They are not going to die. And it's a very hopeful ending where she says, "Arise, arise, from my ashes, arise." So she sees beyond her own life and beyond her own ambitions that the ideas that she has are valid and are going to be put into practice by women in the future. This idea is certainly borne out, and in one of the productions, a concert production that we did in Anchorage, Alaska in 2012, the director had a brilliant idea of having the women politicians, of which there are many in Anchorage, Alaska, come out of the wings when Woodhull sings this in her jail cell, come out of the wings and walk through the audience. And there were so many of them. It was made the hair on the back of your arm, you know, just rise, because it was so exciting to see that this is a reality. I come from a long line of strong women. My grandmother was born in Israel before it was Israel, when it was still under the Turks, and she lived in a tent, and I always think of her as the first pioneer in my family. And my mother was also a very pioneering woman in that she was a concert pianist and traveled all over Europe as a teenager, performing as a soloist. And so that spirit of you can do anything was very strong in the maternal side of my family. And so I went to Juilliard, as my mother had gone to Juilliard, and I was the only woman in the conducting department. And then I was the first woman to be placed, after I graduated from Juilliard, with a major orchestra in the Exxon Arts Endowment program. I was with the Pittsburgh Symphony. And so there have been a number of glass ceilings that I'm happy to have broken. And there's still more to break, so it ain't over yet. It's very interesting because when I first started conducting, there were so many naysayers that said, a woman hasn't done this, therefore a woman can't do this. As a composer, I remember hearing over and over, well, women haven't mastered the larger forms. You know, it's fine if you write little salon pieces, but, you know, forget it if you want to write orchestral or an opera, God forbid. And, you know, it's so interesting because when you look back in history, you find out that there were women who did this. There was a woman in the Renaissance who wrote operas. And I think that I was very encouraged by my family to believe that I could do these things despite what people around me were saying. And working with someone like Victoria Woodhull, and I say working with her because when you write an opera, you really, that person is alive for you. Working with her and knowing the kind of obstacles that she had to overcome in order to achieve what she wanted to, were very, very inspiring to me. And I need that kind of inspiration daily. And I hope that who I am and my work will act in the same way to other women, to other young women who come after me and who need, you know, constant reinforcement that they can do what they believe they've been set out to do. Women in politics today are also very inspiring to me because I know the kind of obstacles that they've had to overcome. And Hillary Clinton in particular, because she's been at it for, you know, over 30 years, and she's had slings and arrows of outrageous fortune thrown at her from every direction. There was a wonderful article that she wrote when she was in law school, how difficult it was for her being the only woman in her class. And as the only woman in the conducting class, I can tell you I understand from firsthand somewhat what that must feel like. But then as a politician and being in public life and having her personal life scrutinized and having all of the disadvantages that she has had, being in a glass bowl is extremely challenging, and I think that she has been so extraordinary to be able to live through this and to maintain a positive outlook. Politics shapes our life, of course. It really determines from the top down so many aspects of our life. And opera reflects life as it is, sometimes drawing on historic stories, but still with a perspective of today. And so I feel that every opera that I've written is in certain ways a political opera because it does have to do with the sociological environment in which we live. So I find that I'm very, very fascinated by history, and it impacts my work a great deal, as the political climate impacts all of us as artists. I mean, there's either interest from the White House or there's funding from the government. There are all sorts of very specific, practical things that that impact us all as artists. If you look around the world, we have so far to go. Women's position in so many countries is really still that of chattel. They can't drive a car. They can't vote. Or if they can vote, the vote is really meaningless because they're not allowed to campaign. They're not allowed to be part of the deciding group of men. And then there's so much abuse in the world, domestic abuse in our own country where women are really trapped. They don't have financial parity. They are usually not as well equipped to support themselves and their children. So I think we have still, these battles have not been won. And that's another reason why I feel that this opera is not just an interesting historic piece. Music speaks directly to the emotions, and this is where opera is in a different plane than a play. Now, plays, of course, are such an extraordinary art form, and they speak to our intellect, and of course, in the hands of a great playwright, they also speak to our emotions. But music speaks directly to a place where there are no words, a place that goes beyond words. And the libretto of an opera needs to be a lot shorter, briefer, less wordy than a play, because it needs to allow space for the music. And what you can do, there are several things that you can do in music that you cannot do in words for a play. Number one, you can characterize each of the personalities with their own musical motif. Number two, you can have people speaking or singing at the same time and have it be understandable, whereas you can't do that in words. If you have everybody talking over each other, it just becomes a jumble.
How long have I stood beside you?
Did I marry a small island?
A silly wind.
A heart like a tongue.
Hair-brained scheme.
And this whole soul.
I suffered for your dreams.
You can't see
the arch of the world.
Sister, you are possessed. She has sent demons upon
you.
But as we know in so many of the great operas, you can have an ensemble where each person is expressing his or her own emotion, and they're doing it at the same time, and it makes sense. We can understand and absorb all of it. And that's one of the things that I find particularly exciting. And also with an opera, the orchestral, the instrumental music acts in so many ways. It can set the scene, the stage set, you know, in your own mind, and it can be a commentary on what is being said. It can act as a subtext. It can go counter to what is being said, which is also a kind of subtext. Somebody is saying one thing and the music underneath is saying something different. So it gives it a kind of a three-dimensionality that I feel only words cannot accomplish.